Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of the Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century and this segment, which is called Nostalgia Town, where I talk to Australians who are 55 and over and well known to all of us about their cultural development. And my guest today is Anton Enos, who is an Australian news presenter, currently the host of SBS World News on the special broadcasting service SBS. Born in South Africa, Anton.
Yes, indeed. Jeff, thank you very much for having me on your program. Yes, I'm a migrant Australian, and I've been living here for most of my adult life, I would say. Very happily, I might add. It's, I felt like I've been welcomed here from day one, and I've been made to fit in, you know, I think exceedingly well. So I'm a sort of very happy person, living a lovely life in Sydney.
Tell me about your formative cultural experiences. What was the important music to you as you were growing up?
Well, I would say I was quite influenced by my parents. They both loved music. They both loved to sing. My mother played the piano, not, you know, in any sort of technically good sense, but she was self-taught. They loved jazz, so we listened to quite a lot of varied music as I was growing up, but mainly the sort of classic jazz artists such as Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan. Della Reese was a great favorite of my parents and became a favorite of mine. Louis Armstrong, of course. So there was a lot of that kind of music wafting through the house during my childhood. My parents always loved to sing along. They loved throwing parties, and it would always end up at the piano. My mother would be playing, everyone would be singing. So there was quite a lot of music in my childhood, but never in a sort of formal sense. It was always just, everyone, if you could sing, you just sing along, enjoy it. It was never whether you could do it very well or very badly. Everyone just had a go. And I think that kind of taught me a real love of music, not just for singing, which I still love to do today, but also just for listening to music, how to, you know, listen with an open mind and listen to things that you're maybe not used to listening to.
Was pop music ever an influence on you?
Well, I suppose pop music of the day, I can remember going to concerts as a youngster. There'd be a visiting R&B artist who might be, you know, famous in the day, someone like Percy Sledge, got everyone very excited. Della Starr was a great, performer from those days. The Hughes Corporation. We loved going to those concerts and just, you know, my parents were quite sort of young at heart. You know, even though as they got older, they always, their attitude was quite young. And so they would be really into their music and into, they'd just get up and dance at concerts and things like that. So it was not, they were never ever kind of middle-aged or aging in any sense of the word. They were always very, very young, outwardly young looking.
And what about theatre and film and other art?
When I was a kid, we'd go to movies quite often, with my friends after school and so on. I did not grow up with television, so there was none of that. Television came very late to South Africa, so you'd go to a matinee movie or you would listen to things on the radio. And I do remember as a child, we would listen as a family. You know, it was one of those things that never happens today, where we'd actually sit together and listen to like a radio drama on the radio or a quiz show or a music variety show or something like that. But you'd actually sit down and listen to it like it was a performance. Of course, you know, the times have changed, so that kind of thing, it's just anathema to everyone now.
Yes, our performances are individual and on our tablets.
Exactly, yes. So everything is streaming. So in those days, everything happened at a particular time, whether it was the news or a music program or whatever it is you were listening to or watching at the movies. And you had to be there for the start. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to miss out. Whereas today, of course, you know, everything is just custom made to everyone's personal needs.
Anton, did Australian popular music, television, at all have an influence on you in South Africa, or did that not really hit you until you arrived in Australia?
Well, there would have been some, you know, some artists that would have made the, were internationally famous. If you think of John Paul Young or the Bee Gees, Olivia Newton-John, we knew all of those names. But if you sort of, if you were to dig a little bit deeper, I wouldn't know the, you know, the sort of iconic names of, say, rock music or, you know, K-San, and, you know, that kind of music was kind of a little bit beyond my ken. So I've only really been exposed a little bit to more of that kind of sort of the non-top 40 format kind of songs that are, since my arrival here 20 years ago. So I feel a little bit deprived. I mean, there's people make references to, you know, songs or artists from the 60s and 70s. It just goes completely over my head.
Surely you've heard of AC/DC in South Africa.
Yes. So, you know, it was, I have to say, it was not the kind of music I was listening to. I was sort of, in my younger days, it was very much pop music, and then I got more influenced by the sort of jazzy stuff that my parents were listening to, and even folk music like Joan Baez and so on, but never really rock music. That was not really something that we listened to.
Yes, well, AC/DC, for instance, were the Bad Boys, and I remember growing up thinking that it was very courageous to listen to such stuff.
So you were more of a rebel, I suppose. You know, Jeff, I've heard somebody said to me a couple of years ago, I said, this has really stuck with me. There are two types of people in the world, those who naturally follow rules and those who naturally break rules. And I think that is absolutely true. So there's some people who want to do, like, you know, exactly the opposite of what convention is or what their parents like, or, you know, kind of strike out in a completely different direction. And then there are others that just kind of feel quite comfortable in the, you know, in the environment that they've created at home. And I think I was certainly, in the community I grew up in, that was more the norm. Everything was sort of family-oriented. We did things together. And there was no, I can't say I really went through a rebellious streak. So I think I was quite happy with the kind of life that we had at home. And things that my parents liked, I tended to like, because it was good stuff. You know, if you think of Ella Fitzgerald or Louis Armstrong, Sarah Vaughan, that was really good music. It was not like, I didn't feel like I needed to rebel against that.
This is a multimedia healthy aging project. So one of the things I will ask my guests is how they are approaching aging. Tell me, Anton, can aging be fun?
Oh, I certainly hope so. You know, that is my intention, certainly, is to enjoy it all the way through. So that is the plan, that you don't, you know, you're not young and then middle age and then old. To me, it's just a continuum. You enjoy, have a kind of thread that goes through all of those ages, and make sure you enjoy things creatively and spiritually through, you know, the different years, the different eras you're going through, but make sure you're always enjoying it. So, you know, that has been my focus all the way through. Don't suddenly get to 55 or 60 and you're facing the prospect of retiring, and then you think, oh, well, what am I going to do now? How am I going to fill my time? What I've done is set in place things that I've enjoyed throughout the decades of my adult life, and then just continue to develop those things. And the music is one of those things. I like playing sports. I play a lot of tennis, and I run, I swim, I do yoga and so on. So those are sort of constructive things to do. And then also in terms of cultural life, I do a lot of attending plays and music concerts, symphonies, opera and so on. So we try to structure our lives in such a way that every day is interesting in some way or another. And the one day is interesting might be completely different from another day is interesting. So one day might be just sitting and doing mindfulness for half an hour, then walking the dog for going out for 2 hours, having a nice long walk with the dog, come back, have a swim, and have a drink on the balcony. Another day may be completely structured, where I've got work stuff in the morning, or I might have preps to do for a conference that's coming up, or, you know, there's stuff like that that's more sort of regimented, and that's nice for that day. and then the next day find something else that is structured but always engaging, always stimulating. I think that's the main thing. Find stuff that you love and then develop those interests. Don't just kind of sit back and think, oh, what am I going to do today? Shall I listen to some music? No, choose something, schedule it, enjoy it, and then find a way to replicate that enjoyment.
Anton, do you value your social connections?
I do. Jeff, I have to say this. I'm not a very gregarious person that I have to have a big party or I have to have big crowds of people. I don't like loud situations. I don't like very raucous situations. I like small groups of people. My socializing will take place in the form of meeting a couple of friends for lunch or through my book club or through my tennis friends. So, lots of little things to do rather than I'm not one for going out in a big group and sort of having a huge night out or doing something where you've got to, jump and shout and stuff like that. I'm a bit over that. I kind of like smaller, quieter things.
You're right. People have different ways of connecting. Some are much more intimate and small grade, and some people are party-ish and want to go out with big groups. But the important thing is that having social networks insulates you, protects you, strengthens you as you age.
Yeah. And I think, we use this term community. I think that's a very important word. If I sort of think about my local neighbourhood, I live in Redfern in Sydney, and I have lived there for a very long time. If I think of all the people that I meet in the course of a morning, I'd be out for a walk or out for a coffee or just in the park with the dog or something like that. There's a lot of that. People look out for one another. They'll stop and say, how are you today? What's been going on? Or if you're out for a coffee, they'll stop and tell you what's been going on in their life. And that translates into situations where someone may be ill or someone may be struggling with something. Those same connections then step up and say, how can I help? What can we do to, support you through this? It sounds like a sort of airy-fairy idea, but it works very, very well in practice. I've seen it, I've been 2 decades living in Redfern now. I see that actually works in an everyday sense. When people are struggling, you hear it through the grapevine, so-and-so is having a problem, they can't do this or they're struggling with that. And then somebody will have a resource to kind of help, even if it just means someone to talk to or someone can't get to the hospital because the husband can't drive them or something like that. There'll always be somebody there who can say, okay, well, I know somebody who can help you with that. I know somebody who can get you an appointment with the doctor or something. I really feel that is a really important thing, that people actually look out for each other. I mean, we were talking earlier about, custom-designed entertainment. Sometimes our lives are like that, where it's so individualized that we sometimes forget about the importance of that community life. But, fortunately, my local neighborhood seems to function quite well at that sort of communal level.
Oh, that's great news, Anton. That the Australian social researcher Hugh McKay, who's been a guest on this program, has a lot to say about the social connections and the centrality they are to our well-being. He reminds us that human beings are a herd animal, and we exist largely, mostly, and most happily when we are with other people.
Mm. That is true. I will say this, though, with a qualification, that I do like those social interactions, but I also do value quiet time. And I think, I think this is something that we sacrifice in our modern lives, where there's so much stimulation. There's so many, everywhere you turn, there are ads being thrown at you. There's a lot of noise on the streets and so on. I really like to be able to retreat into my apartment and just sit there quietly reading for a few hours or doing something that is, that is kind of like an interior moment where you can sort of focus on your personal needs and your personal centeredness, if you like, and just withdraw from all the noise of the world. I think in a lot of the way we live our modern lives, we forget about that aspect. It's kind of recharge the batteries, kind of turn down the stimulation of our minds, and just kind of leave it all outside and say, right, for the next few hours or the next hour or the next 10 minutes, I'm just going to sit here very quietly and not be stimulated by the world. I'm just going to have a quiet recharging of my batteries, and then later on you can just take up the, you know, whatever your objectives are for the day.
Well, Michael Lunig recently spoke about those who have a fear of missing out, FOMO. He yes. has a joy of missing out. He likes yeah. his alone time.
Yeah, I think that is important. You know, it just struck me the other day, Jeff. I was I've started listening to podcasts. You know, that's a few years ago, no one had ever heard of podcasts. Now they're the big thing, of course. So I thought, you know, I was walking into the city, and I thought, well, why don't I listen to a podcast on my walk? It takes me about 45 minutes to walk into the city. That's perfect. But you know what? The noise on the street was so loud. I was not. You don't notice these things until it affects you directly. So I had these, you know, my little earplugs in my ears, listening to the podcast. And half of the time, I couldn't hear what they were saying because there's a huge truck going by. There's a bus. Somebody's hooting. There's just the noise of the traffic. There are voices all around you, constantly talking at very loud volumes. We live in very, very loud times, and I think sometimes you need to kind of just take a step back from that and say, I don't want this constant stimulation all the time. Sometimes it's very nice, but a lot of the time I think we need to learn how to kind of turn it down a little bit and just enjoy the quiet.
A few years ago, Anton, you were diagnosed with early stage bowel cancer, and a lot of our listeners will know about that because you were quite public about it. Do you want to talk at all about that? How is it? How are you going now?
Yeah, I'm going very well at the moment, Jeff. I've been cancer-free for a few months now, so it's been a very good, let me say, 9 months or so. It was a very challenging time. It took from the time of the diagnosis to where I am now has taken about 2 years. It was a bit complicated and so on, but it, as you say, it was detected early enough. I think that's the absolutely crucial part of this story, is that we were able to identify the problem early enough so that they could do something. You know, I think that, to me, that's the message I push more strongly than anything else these days. You've got to arm yourself with information. So, you know, that the National Bowel Cancer Screening Program, I think that is absolutely the best place for people to start, just to kind of, you know, ascertain where they are with the health of their bowel. So, you know, as you know, when you turn 50, you get this kit sent to you free of charge by the federal government. It's a stool sample test that you have to do and send back. Most of the time it'll come back clear, but occasionally there might be something that needs following up. So in my case, it came back clear when I was 50. The second time I did it, I was 55, and then there was a note that said, please see your GP about these results. It didn't say, you know, this is it's a problem or it's a crisis or anything like that. It just said, please see your GP about these results. I did delay for a while. I was, you know, being a typical middle-aged man, I was like, oh, it's nothing, you know, it's a waste of time. I couldn't be bothered, you know, we're going to go through all this effort and then it's going to come to nothing. But I'm very glad that I did have that conversation with the GP, because as it turns out, he said, you know, we'll send you a colonoscopy. We just need to at least exclude some things, you know. And as it turns out, they found a very large tumor in my bowel. That had been there for 7 or 8 years. So it was quite well established, and we needed to do something quite quickly. But without that test, I think it could have just gone horribly wrong. You know, once the cancer starts metastasizing, then you're in very dangerous territory. And so obviously the earlier you can get that diagnose and find out that if there is a problem, find out what it is you can do, the better the outcome at the end.
Absolutely. So that's a bit of a reminder. When we get the bowel screening package in the post, take advantage of it. The earlier we pick these things up, the better, yeah. As you are testimony.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jeff, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that screening program saved my life. You know, if I had no symptoms, you know, and had no family history of it, I was living a very healthy lifestyle. I've never been a smoker. I've spent my adult life running marathons. I've run over 50 marathons, ultramarathons. I'm a very healthy person, you know, very, very moderate drinker. I would never have guessed that there was a problem down there. If it wasn't for the screening program, I would never have known. We might have waited until there were, symptoms, and then it might have been too late. You know, then the cancer could have gone everywhere by then, and then the outcome would have been much more complicated, if not dire. I really urge people to, you know, if you get that kit in the mail, please do it. You know, it takes 5 minutes to do. It really could save your life. At the moment, we have an uptake rate of about 2 in 5. You know, I reckon that is it's too low. You know, 2 out of 5 people actually return the kits and get the sample tested. We need to push that up. You know, it's like it's a free test. It takes 5 minutes and it could save your life.
And perhaps it's a little bit like a plebiscite. You get to vote.
Yes. One way of looking at it. The very real situation about this, though, is that it's such an individual thing. You know, it's like you cannot possibly know if there's a problem down there unless you actually do some kind of test. And, you know, the stool sample test is the most simple. It's not the panacea. It at least will point to some problem if there is a problem. You know, and then it needs some following up. For most people, you won't need any following up. It just gives you the all clear to say everything's fine. It's just within the normal range and so on. That's great. You know, there's a small band of people who are going to need some kind of follow up. And within that, there'll be another small group who will need some kind of proper treatment if there's a cancer problem.
And as you say, it can save your life.
Absolutely, yeah. It's such a weird, counterintuitive thing that the 3 out of 5, 60% of people don't take the test, even though it's free, it's sent to you in the mail. It's very easy to do it, and yet most people don't do it. And then I always ask people this, like, if I said to you, okay, you're going to do this 5-minute test, it's non-invasive, it's free, but it could save the life of your wife or your son or your brother or your mother, would you do it? And of course the answer is yes, of course you would do it. You know, it takes you no effort at all, could save someone's life. But then the question is, why won't you do it for yourself? What's the difference? You know, why would you save somebody else's life with a small effort? And yet the same effort to save your own life, you go, oh, it's too much trouble. I don't have time. I don't want to be a burden on people. So my strong message to people is take that 5 minutes, do the test. It's going to give you just enormous benefits.
Thank you for talking to us about this, Anton. This is a healthy aging program, and looking after your bowel health is a part of your health as you age. Anton Enos, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on the Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century and for being our guest on Nostalgia Town. I'd like to take the opportunity now to ask you if you would like to nominate any song to go out on.
Do you know, a song that I've been listening to now for maybe 40 years has been I've loved from beginning to end, and that is Janis Ian, who sings the song At 17. I absolutely love it.
I learned the truth at 17.
Correct, yes.
Anton, we will go out on that song, and I want to thank you very much for joining us again today.
It's been my great pleasure, Jeff.